Welcome to this episode of the Superhero Ethics Podcast. Today we're discussing the question of, if everybody always had to do exactly what you said, what does it mean that you never hear the word no? We're talking about the ethical makeup of characters like Purple Man from Jessica Jones and Empath from X-Men, and all the questions that go around when you're not just spoiled, but it's taken to the nth degree. All that more after a commercial break we have no control over. Back. I'm Matthew, your host, and I'm joined today, I'm really excited to say, by both of the co-hosts of the Hype Is My Superpower podcast, Steve Starman and Will Freeland. How are you both doing today?
Doing great. What a great commercial break, also. well done.
Can you imagine that's what they're selling right now?
I know. Gosh. but yeah, great to be here. I'm Steve, and really happy to be back on the pod. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Steve, by the look on your face, although you're being very gracious not to say anything, which is odd from a New Yorker, I assume I horribly mispronounced your last name. So can you say it for posterity?
I think you got it. Either you got it right, or I'm so used to it being mispronounced that I didn't even register. It's Stormin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I pretend like the second O is not there.
And, you know, I've only been a New Yorker. I've only lived in New York for 2 years, so I've only been through one horrific disaster. I don't think I count. I only have one on my punch card yet. Anybody who's been here since 9/11, Sandy, the blackout would probably, take issue to me getting that title so quickly.
You still believe in crazy things like saying hello to people on the street, but don't worry. New York will grind that out of you eventually.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, I'm so glad I have both of you here. I love your podcast. I love getting to talk to each of you individually, but especially the two of you, great chemistry. It's great to have all three of us here. And just let folks know, this podcast started because I reached out to the two of them and said, hey, I want you on the podcast. What do you want to discuss? And you were bouncing around this ethical thing about the character from Empath, from a new X-Men story. Empath being a character who, as I understand it, whatever they say, people have to do it. Which reminds me a lot of Purple Man from Jessica Jones, a character who I have always found utterly fascinating, particularly in the portrayal by David Tennant in the Netflix TV show, but also that's one of the few comic books where I actually have read quite a bit of it.
Mm.
The Purple Man series is just such a brilliant use of art, if nothing else, in terms of all the ways that Purple shades the comics, even when Jessica's not trying to think of him, just kind of showing her sort of overall... how much he affects her life until she's finally free of that.
So, yes.
Once I heard Purple Man in this, I was so psyched for this topic.
For me, both Purple Man and Empath, I've only seen a little bit of in the comics. For listeners who don't know. So one, this is Will. Hi. But also, I do my best to read all of Marvel 616, the main Marvel universe, but only from, like, I've only started reading from, like, 2002, 2003 on. Mm-hmm. And Purple Man, his name is Zebediah Kilgrave. He was introduced in the comics back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And he, like, really came to the front in Alias in, mm-hmm. For the Jessica Jones story. But I didn't read that. And the next time I saw him, every time I've seen him since, he's been like a single story arc character.
Makes sense.
He ends up being the one that manipulated the situation in the background, and this, that, and the other.
Right.
My exposure to Empath, he's a much older character. I think he was introduced in the 80s, 90s?
80s, yeah.
Yeah. And then for me as a reader, he's only shown up just recently, like last year, during this Krakoa era of X-Men.
Yeah, I also have this horrible disease where I'm trying to be a completionist about reading all of the X-Men comics, and so I know I've read most things Empath has ever been in, but also comparatively little Purple Man. But there's another character who I'd like to discuss later in this who I have read a little bit of, so. Yeah.
Awesome. Have you both seen the Netflix Jessica Jones show?
Totally.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
I don't think we're going to get through this entire recording without at least five instances of Will doing his David Tennant impression.
I've been trying so hard.
I am here for it. Will, what's the name of the character that Purple Man is so obsessed with in?
Oh, Jessica.
There you go. Thank you. But yeah, I'm a little excited to this. And let's just start with Purple Man a bit and then kind of dive into the empath thing, because I know that's something you two have discussed on your own podcast a bit recently, and that's kind of where all this came together. I read Alias, but I especially got like really pulled into the character of Jessica, of the Purple Man, of Kilgrave, through that Netflix TV show. I think that's where a lot of our listeners probably most know him from.
Yeah.
Although I think it's a fairly accurate kind of portrayal compared to the what I know of him in the comics. And for most of that show, especially, as well as the comic book, he is Iago levels of evil, you know, in terms of it's not even mustache twirling, but just there is nothing redeemable. There's nothing to ever say like this is a, you know, person we should feel sympathy for, or even have like Killmonger or Magneto levels of maybe they have a point. Except that there's one or two moments in the later episodes of that show where, first of all, they show you that he was horribly abused by his parents and had just an awful childhood. And I like that there the show does a good job of showing, like, this helps explain how much of a monster he is without justifying it.
Yeah.
But you do feel almost a little bit of sympathy, even though he's obviously this horrible person. But then he also has a moment where he says, like, he basically talks about how if everybody always says yes to him, how horrible that is. Because he can't just say, you know, oh gosh, I wish someone would just push that guy off a bridge. You know, just the way, the kind of things we all might say in frustration of just like, oh, I'm so pissed at this person. Like, I just want to blow up that building. He says that and like, wow, I sound like a sociopath myself saying those things. But, you know, like, you know, you're talking about like, ah, how great would it be if school burned down? We didn't have to go do homework tomorrow. Like,
yeah,
he says
anybody
that someone's going to go
play a video game. Totally understands.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, someone's going to go burn down that, you know, school building now. Like, and that was something that always stuck with me, and I always wanted to explore further because, again, I don't want to justify him in any way, but it got me thinking about, like, yeah, when you're never told no, like, that does something to your personality. It warps your personality in a way. You see this just with people who are spoiled in any way. On another podcast that I'm on right now, the Marvel Movie Minute, that I think both of you either have or are going to appear as guests, we've been talking about how much Thor, at the start of the first Thor movie, is a very spoiled child. No one's ever told him no, and how that affects him. So I love the idea to kind of see Purple Man in a similar light. And so let's just kind of start there before we get into the empath side of things. What's kind of your take on Purple Man, and especially that aspect of his, of who he is?
Yeah, I feel like the other moment from late in the Jessica Jones series is that, I don't know how accurately I'm remembering this, but I feel like there's a moment in which it's either in the series or in Alias, the comics, where he really believes that he's in love with Jessica. Like, he thinks that, you know, that there's some genuine emotion attachment, either, you know, from his part or whatever. And there's just, I mean, there's, yeah, how would you even, how would you have authentic emotions of your own without genuine communication, love, trust, empathy, respect, you know, all of these things that defines, you, that are created through meeting another person as a person, as themselves, as an individual that's separate from you. Real, you know, going all the way into the nature of the self, even. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that idea. It's like, how do you self-actualize yourself in that kind of way when you don't ever have everyone else? No one can self-actualize themselves around you, because whatever they're, no one can ever actually have interest in you. No one can ever actually have desire for you. You know, it's, you often will have characters or people in real life who talk about how, because they have so much money, or because they are so stunningly beautiful, or because they have, you know, they're a prince or whatever it is, or a princess, that there's a frustration of like, does this person want me for me, or do they just want me for my body or my money or something like that? And I can, again, like, I feel so dirty even talking about being sympathetic to this monster, but I can understand how that would be such a hard part of finding yourself in any kind of way.
Yeah. Like, it's, whenever I think of that, about that kind of like analysis, I have to remind myself that Kilgrave doesn't have control over when he uses his mind control, like influence ability. Right. It's always on. So literally every single word he says could end up being an accidental command. Like, I can't even imagine like stubbing my toe on accident in public and then accidentally making someone go kill themselves because I said, oh, the fuck off. Like, like, it's just, it's mind-blowing. Like, you either kind of take, you kind of have to go along, like, one of two paths. Like, you fully embrace it, and which turns you into just a terrible person, or you just stop talking to people.
Yeah.
And, like, you're walking on the thinnest of glass, all the eggshells, 24/7. And I can't imagine either of those paths for me. It's just, that's just, it's crazy. It's wild.
Yeah. And I think one of you put into the notes something about that there's also a character named Purple Girl who kind of explores how this looks differently from in gender perspectives.
Yeah. And I think that that's a real fascinating. So Purple Girl is his daughter in the comics. And, you know, this was not the product of a consensual relationship. And so her upbringing, you know, it was, she didn't know that, you know, her true parentage until she reached a certain age. She developed, you know, purple skin and these sort of pheromone powers and started getting this, you know, power of suggestion over people. But she is actually able to control it. Not perfectly, not very well sometimes, but she at least has some ability to turn it off. You know, emotion, when she's, you know, with emotions or she's getting carried away, like it can, you know, come out of her unbidden, but, it kind of raises for Purple Man, you know, maybe he does and he never saw it fit to develop that or, you know, extend that in the same way. He wasn't horrified in the same way by these powers as she is, because the trauma is part of her upbringing. The trauma that other people feel from those powers is an essential part of who she is. And I think that is in some ways, you know, unique to her parentage, but in a lot of ways about the sort of gendered power fantasy of these powers. That when they're visited through this male character, everything that he gets is, you know, sex and respect, you know, and riches and creature comforts. And her story is so much more about, you know, trying to have authentic relationships with people and working on it and trying to do, you know, good with these powers. And, you know, she joins the Canadian superhero team Alpha Flight, who have a host of their own problems. But, you know, she, you know, she's presented mostly as a hero. And I think that it's, you know, we can read a lot into the gendered presentation of these two characters. Another question that you set up for Purple Man is, could he have his... Oh, sorry.
You sort of dumped a huge can of worms there on the table that I wanted to jump into a bit.
Yeah.
Because that makes me super fascinated to hear about, especially because one of the things that I've always thought Purple Man was interesting as was as kind of a metaphor for understanding toxic masculinity.
Absolutely.
For me, one of the things that I really had to learn was that, you know, I grew up thinking my voice is the same as anyone else's. And if I say, hey, can we do this? Anyone's always free to say, like, yes, I'd love to do that. Or, oh, no, thank you. And having to realize that, like, my privilege, primarily the fact that I'm non-binary, but I certainly present to the world as male. And I've been, I did identify as male for most of my life, but also my whiteness, my education level, my extrovertedness, whatever it is, you know, means that for some people, my voice does carry more weight than I might want it to. And that just sort of, you know, having an attitude of, hey, can we do this? Without recognizing there might be like power dynamics that aren't being understood there. And that it might be harder for some folks to say no in some situations. That was something that was really hard for me to learn. And I definitely was kind of a jerk about it and hurt some people before I really figured it all out. I've not by any means figured it all out. But you know what I mean? Kind of had that awakening. And yeah, that was a part of the Purple Man story that I could really see of like, yeah, this is... you know, most of us, I don't think, have that level of power, but I think a lot of people have. We are much more persuasive sometimes than I think we give ourselves credit for. And that can be, there's always an assumption of, well, someone can always just say no. And I don't just mean in like romantic or sexual things. I mean in anything, you know, but it's kind of like a, you know, a boss saying to their employee, hey, do you mind staying late tonight? The boss might think I'm giving the employee the choice, but the employee is thinking, well, if I say no, am I going to get in trouble? And so, yeah, to me, I think there's such a great metaphor there for Purple Man, primarily for masculine presenting folks, but for anybody in positions of power or privilege, that we might think we're saying, you know, a person could think they're saying, we might think we're saying, hey, here's a thing, you can say no, but it's actually a lot harder for folks to say no in some situations than we might think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. And to even just go along with that, in the comics, there's been Kara Kilgrave, his daughter, but there's also been recently 6 other of his children. one is also an adult, his son Benjamin, and he has been presented so far as a villain. Same purple skin, it's implied that he's got the same powers. And then there's also this group called the Purple Children, which are not his genetic children, but they have been given his same abilities. And there's like 3 boys and like 2 girls, but they're all like 5 years old. So like they haven't come, they haven't like decided what their identity or like how they want to use their ability is. They were involved in making the world forget that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. One of the most recent times that he's had the world forget. and that was the Purple Children. There's like, there's 5 of them. They have glowing purple eyes and it's very creepy. But yeah, Benjamin and Kara. So like Benjamin is, he was working with his father on his latest situation scheme. And one must assume that he is not a very good guy.
And Kara, Purple Girl, Kara Kilgrave, her powers didn't develop until she was in adolescence. And so she had at least some amount of, you know, growing up, being able to speak with other people as individuals, encounter the unknowable other to an extent, and without having total control over them. And I can see that being very different from, you know, growing up with it and in this sort of like ego response, reward situation.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what we're going to get into with Beast as well, with Empath and Beast. I mean, is that, you know, to have that experience of recognizing that people might not like the things you ask them for, or that you can cause pain, or as you said, that the trauma of that, to me, I can understand why she has such a very different experience, because that would be such a big thing. And it kind of gets me to the question that I think, Steve, you were kind of leading me into, that I put in the notes, and I think it's going to be the kind of overall question of this episode. We can start just with Purple Man, and then let's talk about Empath and how that changes things, is, could you have this power and not wind up being evil? Do you think you could grow up never having people say no to you, never having people, you know, tell you that they don't want to do a thing that you want, that they want something else instead, never having to wrestle with what does it mean to live in a world where your wants and desires aren't the same as other people's, and not turn out to be someone like Purple Man? What do you think?
I want to say that you could grow up a decent person, but I don't think you can. Like, you grow as a person through like adversity and figuring out like yourself and how you react to situations that are out of your control. But if you control every situation and you never are, and we go into it with that entry from Beast, but like, if every interaction you've had for everything you've ever done is positively reinforced, when are you ever going to figure out that what you just did was you shouldn't do to other people or to the world or to like your pet or anything?
Right.
I do think that though, that Purple Man has had enough opposition to himself over the course of his life that there's some crack in the foundation is there. He knows that somebody, you know, can resist him, is against him, that there's some part of the world that isn't under his control. And he seems to have knowledge of how it works, you know, that it's through speaking. And I think that it's a power that can't be used for good, but if you have that ability to reach other people as individuals, then yeah, you have a responsibility to not use the power.
Right. And in Purple Man's, not defense, but I think an important thing for him is he doesn't just have the power. He also has this horrifically abusive childhood by parents who treat him like a lab specimen. And it is an interesting thing to wonder, like, could you have parents who would at least explain to him why him asking for those things is hard, or, you know, why it causes them pain, or show him enough? Because I think one thing that can, I want to be very careful here, because I think often more recently films have kind of gotten to the idea of like, oh yeah, someone who has a lot of abuse or PTSD in their childhood or anything like that can turn into a villain, and kind of make it seem like all people who do become sociopaths or psychopaths or anything like that. 100,000,000% not the case.
Right.
And I'm not saying that therefore that also is like, you know, people can be horribly treated the way Kilgrave was and not turn out to be who he is. But it's certainly one thing, it is certainly a reason for in his case. And one thing that can happen is that when you're shown people who just want to use you for those ends, the idea that there's anything wrong with you using them for your own ends never really... Mm. So I think Purple Man, he kind of had both of those strikes against him.
Mm.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of tease apart, but it's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, let's kind of look at this other example of it that you all brought to me. And Empath, I believe, is not a character who's appeared on screen in any kind of meaningful way. Am I right? Maybe in the...
No.
Okay. So give us the setup, and then... Because what kind of started this all is apparently a thing that in one of the more recent comic books, Beast writes as kind of like a report on his work with Empath that I think is just... so perfect. So start out just by telling us a little bit more about these characters and kind of what leads up to that moment, and then let's talk about the writing itself.
Yeah, and we saw this and we immediately thought of you, because this is this is, you know, just ethics writ large, just, you know, riven all through this. And I think powers wise the crucial difference maybe between I guess I don't know enough about how Purple Man's powers work, but Empath's powers are emotional rather than like mental control. And so it's not just that he makes people do what he wants. He changes how they feel. You know, genuinely feel, you know, adulation or positive towards him, no matter what his actions are.
In some ways, that's even more powerful than Purple Man because, and maybe again, when he's too young, he doesn't learn this, but you see in the show and in the comics, you know, if Purple Man tells a person to go kill themselves, they have this look of horror on their face.
Yeah.
And they can't tell him no, but clearly they don't like this idea. And so he gets that level of negative reinforcement that he ignores. It sounds like Empath doesn't even have that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And with Empath, is it unconscious in the same way as for Purple Man? That, like, can Empath decide not to use his power and let people be sad in his presence? Or is it just always going to be... You cannot feel emotions he doesn't subconsciously want you to in his presence.
It seems to be more of a conscious, you know, turn on and off. But it for something that powerful or that deep that goes, you know, into the deepest parts of yourself, how can you really know what he is affecting and what he isn't? They definitely show on panel, on page in the comics, instances where he is, quote, using his powers, and it's abundantly clear. But, like, you know, maybe he was using it all the time, and this is the more aggressive, you know, or obvious variant of it.
Now, is he presented as a hero, as a villain, as someone kind of caught in the middle? What kind of ethical role does he play in the comics?
Overwhelmingly villain. He was originally one of Emma Frost's students in her original group, the Hellions, and they were presented as the sort of, you know, evil counterparts to you know, to Xavier's young students, the New Mutants, but that all of the other Hellions were more or less redeemed at some point or killed off. And he was the only one. They tried to redeem him at one point, and he had a relationship with Magma, one of the New Mutants characters. They tried to make it work, and then she just couldn't figure out at a certain point where, you know, he ended and she began. And so, and she was already pretty messed up from a lot of other things and called it off. And he never really went back to being a redeemed or redeemable character after that. Will, do you have any more empath notes?
No. So I in the little bit that I've seen him, it feels like he can at least direct where his mutant ability, or like who his mutant ability is affecting. It's not like it's just everyone within a certain radius. Right. Like he like can like look, it's almost as if like the people that he concentrates on are the ones that are manipulated emotionally. And then as people show up and he like addresses you, all of a sudden that's when you get affected. And so like it doesn't really change the context of the question. Because it's still all of his interactions seem to be have the potential to be manipulated by his mutant ability. Right. So yeah,
I guess one situation that I can remember where his powers were used for good was calming like a panic. Do you remember this, Will? It was in like the Morrison New X-Men when Weapon whatever got out of the world and they're like chasing it down, and this is the storyline where Darkstar died, and he's part of that team who's like trying to evacuate a group of people, and they're all like panicked and stampeding, and he calms them down.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
So there has been positive applications of his powers before.
Yeah. I mean, and I can imagine that even some of the stuff that by now is incredibly negative could even start from a very positive place, you know? Anyone who's any kind of background in therapy, or even just if you pay attention on like, you know, Facebook or TikTok to the discussions about like how to be a good friend versus a bad friend, can know, like, you know, if a friend of yours is sad, cheering them up is often a really good thing you can do. But sure, there's a real question of like, are you doing this because you want them, you care about them and you want them to feel better? Or are you doing this because other people being sad around you is unpleasant for you? Mm-hmm. And there can be a, you know, the line of like toxic positivity and stuff like that, of, you know, when it's not, you want to help them experience what they need to experience and go through it and come out okay, but just, hey, let's put a smile on your face right now, and the person never gets to deal with the stuff they have to deal with, and that can be, you know, really harmful. I don't know much about this character, but I can easily see that sort of person of like, oh, you know, I don't want mom crying around me, or I don't want, you know, this person crying around me. I'm going to cheer them up. And not, you know, first, that's great positive reinforcement. People are happy around you. You know, I think people love generating positive emotions in other people. When I cook for people, when I create music or whatever, I love that it seems to create positive emotions. And I could see that being something that someone would really love. And it become very hard, yeah, as you kind of said, the same self-actualization questions of Purple Man, of when are you actually having this and when are you forcing it and how do you know the difference?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It kind of, it also, to in terms of like using your power to make people happy, or using the power to manipulate others and doing whatever the hell you want them to do, I think it kind of depends on when that ability manifests. Like, if it manifests when you're a young child, and you haven't figured out, you haven't gone through the like, experiments of life to figure out what is intrinsically good or bad, then this could lead down the path of an empath, as opposed to like, say, getting this ability as like a young adult, or like in your 20s, which is still kind of a young adult but not traditionally defined as such.
It's a young adult who has to pay taxes.
Yeah. But like, I feel like developing that ability then, where you have more of a sense of self and what you want to do and be in the world, it could be a good thing. It could be used as a good thing.
Definitely. And you go, talk now about that particular writing. Like, what's the situation where Beast is kind of studying him, and then what's the actual writing?
Absolutely. So we have Empath is he's recruited into this team of sort of violent or antisocial or generally unfixable mutants in this broader mutant society, which is the current sort of status quo for X-Men comics right now. And they all live on this island that is actually everywhere in the universe because of teleportation, called Krakoa. And he, we just see a scene of him, like forcing, three of his friends, or quote unquote friends, former teammates on the Hellions, who've been brought back to life because comics, to just fight each other for his amusement. And then another one of his former teammates comes in with a look of horror, and then he manipulates that guy to, you know, enjoy the fight and, you know, egg them on and so on. And then he gets bored and walks away. And he just has this privileged look on his face of just, ugh, the whole time.
Yeah. Right.
He looks like your, like, textbook rich suburb white kid that like the only time he's gone outside and interacted with people is at the tennis club kind of a thing. he's got like the short blonde hair, the blue eyes, the smug look on his face. Oh, it's infuriating.
And we're both from Santa Barbara, California, so we've seen a lot of that.
Yeah. When I was a kid, or when I was a teenager, I was a counselor at a day camp for like very young kids, like 3 to 7 or so. But they were all the kids of like very rich, privileged New Yorkers. And there'd be times where, you know, I'd tell little Johnny to pick up his toys, and you could just tell no one had ever asked him to do that before.
Yeah.
So yeah, I very much get the kind of thing you're talking about there, and I can totally see that. So then how does Beast get involved?
So Beast, at this point, we all know Beast, hopefully from, you know, movies and cartoons and so on, but he's the resident sort of
grammar, for those who don't remember, from the original
yeah.
movies.
he's the, you know, the resident sort of genius but also humanist, but he's been put into this humanist, as you know, the broad term including mutants. And he's been brought into this sort of very morally compromising role that Will has a lot of problems with, as the basically director of the mutant CIA.
Okay, I can see that causing some issues, yeah.
and so he's writing this memo basically about, you know, certain internal security problems, and the broader concept of this mutant nation is that, you know, they want to give every mutant the opportunity for self-actualization, for, you know,
right.
It's the combination of the three sort of pillars ideologically of this society are Xavier, Magneto, and Apocalypse. So you've got Xavier's sort of utopian vision of peace, but also Magneto's separatism and superiority, and right. Apocalypse's lionization of the strong. And so the sort of synthesis of that is to help every mutant reach their full potential as a mutant, to, you know, fully right. express their powers, their selves, without bigoted and repressive governments of humans, etc.
Small book mark, we are absolutely doing an ethics episode on Krakoa then, because that fascinating. But anyway, so Beast is writing this stuff. He's kind of been studying Empath. Go ahead and read what he writes, because I think it was such a gut punch to me about summarizing everything I wanted to talk about with this issue.
Yeah. Will, do you want to read this, or should I?
Sure. Let me pull it up. Dun, dun, dun. All right. So Empath's human name is Manuel de la Rocha. And so this is called The Empath Problem, Notes on Manuel de la Rocha. I've finally analyzed the temporal psi slices Emma harvested from Manuel de la Rocha's brain. Comics,
some
guys.
Real jargon there.
The results were disturbing as expected, but for an alarming reason. They revealed a cold, sadistic mind ravaged not by psychosis or genetic defect, but bad data. To explain, the brains of our species, like those of our Homo sapiens cousins, come hardwired for environmental feedback. We touch a flame, we get hurt, we never touch the flame again. So too do we look to our peers for emotional feedback. We hurt a friend, their tears shame us, we strive to bring back a smile. So we learn to bargain, apologize, embrace, and connect. Not so Empath. Upon the activation of his X gene at an atypically young age, Manuel gained the power to control the emotions of others. He had only to flex his mind and all social feedback became positive. No matter how hurtful his actions, he only experienced love and adoration in return. His insults would inspire affection, his violence, adulation, his sadism, devotion. No action was so heinous as to alienate him from his peers as they were under his thrall. Environmental cause and effect, the emotional data the mind relies on to form its reality, disappeared. Manuel de la Rocha is a warped, profoundly unpleasant young man, a danger to every mutant on Krakoa. But the uncomfortable truth of his case is this. A violent sociopath was not gifted the X gene. The X gene created a violent sociopath. Knowing this, what do we do with the other mutants whose gifts and their expression are intrinsically antisocial? How do we rehabilitate them without fundamentally rejecting their mutant identity? That is the question.
That's a simple question.
Real straightforward.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think of, first of all, his analysis? Does this sound accurate to you for what you know of the Empath character?
Absolutely. It's one of those things in comics where the stories have been going on so long that even if this didn't completely jibe with everything that's come before, it's so much more thought out and it's, you know, creating a good story that, yes, roll with it. But yeah. Absolutely, this is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And I think the real key part there isn't, a violent sociopath was not gifted the X gene. The X gene created a violent sociopath.
Right. I would imagine then by this set of analysis, Beast would say in the same way, Purple Man, like the evil that Purple Man is today, or not even the Purple Man, the violent sociopath, however you define it, was created by his power. You know, it seems like it's a very similar question here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that idea of the bad data, because I think that kind of gets to the heart of what we're talking about here, is that so much of how we learn how to interact in the world is through the data we gather. You know, and I'm a person who, I'm still figuring out where I actually fall in terms of neurodivergence, but, you know, I know I am some kind of neurodivergent, ADHD, and perhaps somewhere on a spectrum of some kind. I'm still figuring that out, but like, my conversations with other folks who are anywhere on those issues, that's a phrase that I often hear, is that, like, you know, they just collect data in different ways, or they have trouble getting the data that someone else might get, because it's a very, you know, our brains are computers to some extent, and we, you know, it's funny, at one point they say the phrase, you know, you touch a flame and then you never touch it again. You hurt a person, you absolutely never hurt them again. Like, I wish that was the case, but we don't learn emotional stuff that quickly.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more complicated. But I think it's true. You know, most of the things that we try to do now as good people, it's probably because we either experienced or we saw someone else experience, sometimes even at our own cause, someone else, you know, going through the opposite of that. And that's why we value the you know, fighting oppression or not, you know, jealousy or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I can absolutely empathize. I was also, had undiagnosed ADHD all through, you know, childhood. And then it wasn't until just horrendous problems at work and you know, personal relationships and stuff that I went and sought a diagnosis. And now I'm staring down all these, you know, decades of this internalization of I'm lazy or I'm not, you know, right. capable of these sorts of things. And no, like, this is a condition that I can manage and, you know, with work and all of this to try and, you know, temper these symptoms. So I can definitely sympathize with that. And yeah, you don't know what you don't know. It's very right. easy to build habits based on, yeah, either bad data or, you know, hurtful patterns or whatever.
Right. And it's so interesting because it also, I mean, it's the nature of this podcast. I always want to look for the metaphor, you know. One of the things that I have really found fascinating more recently is, you know, with all this debate about like the 1% and the rich and stuff like that, a trend that's been coming out more and more is that the most wealthy, the most privileged in our society today are far more alienated from the people who their actions cause harm to than might have been the case 50 or 100 years ago, you know, in terms of separate schools and separate communities and gated communities. And, you know, that if you go through life only hearing about how everybody loves your product and never hearing about the harm that your wages cause or that your factory causes, like, you never have that feedback. And today in the world of TikTok and Twitter, you certainly hope, you know, that there's ways to break through. And I'm not for a minute justifying, like, I think often that kind of ignorance is self-imposed and that makes it very easy to judge. But I think there's a truth there of, you have to see that your actions are causing harm in order to recognize that, in order to want to change. And I think we often define someone as being evil by, or sociopathic or whatever it is, by, well, they saw the harm that they were doing and they didn't care. But a character like this raises a very different question of, what if you quite literally never see the harm that's being caused?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so, I do think that that's where science fiction kind of diverges from real life. And, mm-hmm. you know, honestly, maybe we need to ascribe more agency to empath, too, in this example, because he can see, you know, or like I said with Purple Man, like, Purple Man sees the misery on people's faces when he tells them what to do. Like, right. he can see the pain he's causing. He chooses to ignore it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's... For somebody who, you know, is doing terrible things to the real world, you know, that even if there's, you know, giant social structures in place to make sure that they're blinded from the effects of it, there's still ways for them to find it out. Like, I understand the argument that they've mm-hmm. been, you know, put blinders on and segregated and et cetera, alienated from this knowledge, but it's out there. And yeah. I think there's, you can't, you know, I don't think Mark Zuckerberg is oblivious to the fact that people don't like him. You know, does he care? Does he find reason to take these people seriously, to accept their agency and individuality? That's not, you know, that's on for him.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think about it more in terms of like, the children who are now growing up in those worlds, you know, where they're right. not having any of the contact. But even so, yeah, there's, you go on TikTok, you go on Twitter, there's a degree of willful ignorance that has to be at work there.
Yeah. Well, I want to turn this on towards Will. I know we might be jumping a little bit ahead on the agenda here, but I mean, as far as, well, both of you, Matthew, you said you had the experience with the camp of the rich New Yorkers. Will, you went to a private school with a bunch of rich Californians. Mm-hmm. And I know that it was an overwhelmingly positive experience for you in so many ways. I don't mean to trash the school itself, but it seems like maybe you had one or two interactions that may color your knowledge of this conflict or this situation.
Well, I get, well, my
without calling out anybody in specific.
Well, it's more like the experiences were like, I guess it was seeing what you could do with money to like not have to struggle. And it's not it wasn't necessarily like people's reactions to things were altered because any one family was worth X amount of dollars with 18 commas in their in their bank account. But you know, like, we had a girl in our class who went snowboarding and she ended up breaking both of her wrists. And then so for like 2 weeks, instead of struggling to keep up and like have notes, they had a caretaker follow her around at school for 2 weeks to take notes for her. And like, if that happened to me, I'm just screwed. I'm learning how to write with holding a pencil between two of my hands to my cast, just writing really big. but like that's not necessarily like a product of you know, lack of empathy towards others or anything like that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think in some ways what you're talking about is the literal definition of privilege. You know, it's the, I have never had to worry about something that someone else has had to worry about, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think I've definitely seen that, especially in context, because, you know, the reality is I came from a quite comfortable middle to upper middle class family. After my parents divorced, my mother had major economic problems, but my father was and continues to do quite well. I went to a private school like the one you're talking about, Will, where relative to the people I was at school with, I was on the poor side, you know? Mm-hmm. I would get made fun of because my family went on vacation to New England instead of going to Europe. And so I thought if you went on vacation to New England, that meant you were the poorest person in the world at 10 years old. I had an interesting education when I learned that actually talking about my extreme poverty because of this was not accurate. But I think that's the point, is that it's so much of what we learn is from our context, you know, is about seeing like who has more than us and seeing who has less than us. And when we're only exposed to one or the other or neither, you don't learn those kind of things, you know? Yeah. And I love the way this is phrased, especially because at the end, Beast isn't sympathetic. one of the things I think that's so important to me in ethical conversations is being able to separate the why a person does the things they do versus the effect that they have, you know? And I think, like, for example, with pedophiles, you know, is a topic that gets discussed a lot. And I am a strong proponent of the idea that, like, pedophilia is a sickness. It is a disease. These are not necessarily people we should hate. But for them to then say, oh, so therefore we should, like, let them back out into society without any... No, like, there's an extreme danger that can be caused, that is presented, and the harm that can be done is horrifically tragic and terrible. And you have to be able to understand, like, you can be sympathetic for why a person does the things they do while also understanding the things they do are not acceptable and we have to protect society from that, or however you want to get into it. That's a whole other discussion of criminal justice, but I just love the way Beast is able to do that, of able to name, like, this person is a danger, this person's a problem, but let's also look at why that is.
And also, you know, when you're in this social, the society of trying to, you know, elevate and, realize the full expression of the individual as a member of your, you know, sort of separatist speciesist arrangement here, like, trying to the quote here, you know, how to rehabilitate them without fundamentally rejecting their mutant identity, so embracing this as a matter of identity, mm-hmm. this sort of deep, distinct antisocial, because it is a fundamental aspect of who they are, right. And you are interested in, you know, maximizing that. That is a very fraught conversation as well.
And, like, also within Krakoa, you know, rule number one is kill no man. And I don't think you can, like...
Meaning human.
Yeah, sorry.
Say, that sounds horrifically misogynistic, but I'm guessing it's more...
Kill, you're not allowed to kill any humans. And, and there is a conversation around... that, like, being involved in an incident where a human ended up killing another human, you know, how So far on paper, they have written those off as okay. But then if you have someone like Empath and he goes and incites a 12v12 riot where 15 people pass away, is he the reason, or he's the reason why it happened, but is that something that they will exile him for? Because he didn't personally kill them?
Right. And yeah, it's like, I can see how that causes real things. Yeah. And
there's some double standards going on in Krakoa that
I'm sure
stand out to me from time to time.
Well, and I think this is one of my favorite kinds of argument because, you know, obviously he is inciting emotions in people in the way that, like you said, Steve, science fiction diverges from reality because no one can do that. But then on the flip side, think about how every time we learn about, you know, someone who was radicalized by the right into doing horribly violent things, the radicalization process is 100% an attempt to manipulate a person's emotions. Mm-hmm. And I bring this up, again, not to justify it, but to say, I think it's easy for us to say either someone like Empath created an emotion in you, or the emotion is 100% organic and true to you, as though it's a binary. And that the reality is, the things we're doing here with using this as the metaphor, it's a question of degree, not of a whole new reality. Because he might inspire that in whole new ways, but like everything around us is always manipulating our emotions. And as I think so much of human life is a struggle to fight that off and to recognize that and recognize when we're doing it with others. And so I just kind of love seeing it in that kind of terms of, this isn't something new and totally different. It's doing what advertising does. It's doing what your parents do. It's doing what anyone who gaslights you or manipulates you does, but to the nth degree.
Absolutely. Yes, very much so.
Will, I appreciate you nodding so emphatically, but that makes pretty bad radio. I just got to point
out. Oh, my God. My bad. Yeah. Yes, you're right. Yes, I also agree. Nod, nod, nod. I will say nod from now on.
I mean, hopefully I inspire, like, you know, response, not just, you know, blind acceptance. But yes, no, I totally get what you're saying. I don't normally record with video on, so it's just an interesting change to, you know, get to see those responses. Well, and so what, let me actually first ask in the comic, but then we can talk about in real life, what happens then to the character of Empath? Like, is this the most, is Beast writing this the most recent thing we have? Do we know more about what did they decide to do with him?
Yeah, they went on a mission and on their first, okay, so there's this other guy, John Graycrow, he's known as Scalp Hunter. He is kind of the field leader for this team of antisocials to sort semi-Black Ops CIA team.
He's an interesting case in this too, ethically, because he is, you know, a guy with a lot to atone for. He is, you know, he's responsible for a wholesale slaughter of innocent mutants back in the 80s called the Mutant Massacre. He was sort of the leader of the team that did that, and outwardly he shows no remorse. He's just very, like, stone-faced, you know, militaristic. You get hints of some interiority with him that the series is exploring a lot, but he's sort of this test case, or this sort of other side of the coin from Empath of, you know, where and when is redemption possible and how. But sorry, Will, go ahead.
No, you're good. And so on their first mission, Grey Crow's like, if I get the sense that you are using your Empath abilities on me, I will kill you. And Empath is like, yeah, okay. And then, like, five pages later, he uses his abilities on him, and Grey Crow's like, well, and shoots him in the face and kills him. So,
okay.
And this is on Krakoa, but they can bring back mutants all the time, like, just like at will. They just can resurrect. They've conquered death. And so, you know, a character death doesn't mean, it means even less than normal in comics.
Okay.
And
which
so
is
it's mostly
a very low bar, let's be honest here.
Yeah.
I watched Purple Man die.
No longer care.
Yeah.
Non-mutants still care, but there's like four other popular ways of resurrection outside of Krakoa. But within Krakoa, death is part of your mutant life, and they have perfected the process of bringing you back, including implanting all of your old memories into your new body.
Empath has to respawn, I guess.
Empath got killed in the first volume that we read.
Like, literally, they'd like barely walked in the front door where they were doing their mission.
Like, and the second immediately page of the shot second in issue. The face.
Hilarious. Yeah. It was played for laughs.
Yeah.
But it's also horrifying. But
more issues have come out since then, but Steve and I haven't read them yet. And so I don't know where Ampath is, if he's been brought back, if he's still on the team. But
yeah,
as far as me and Steve's canon's concerned, he is dead.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. I kind of love that. And I love the idea that for him, it would be that instinctual and that hard to restrain, but that also other people would have that response because this may be a topic that you two have strong feelings on that we'll get into some other episode, but you know, one of my first episodes way back many years ago was on how Professor X is actually one of the like biggest villains out there because of the way he non-consensually affects people's minds and emotions and feelings all the time. But on the flip side, I can imagine it being helpful to have someone at the X mansion, or I guess now Krakoa, who people can go to and be like, look, I can't get out of this depression. Can you cheer me up? Or can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
Or the opposite. Like, can you let me feel sad? I feel so numb and I need some way to break through. Like, if it's consensual, that power could be great. Or even I would say, like, you know, my next thought would be, or like, yeah, people, when people are feeling super antisocial emotions, helping to calm them down. But that itself just leads to such a dangerous path of, well, but I think I'm helping, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, there's... It's kind of tangential, but there's this other character from Avengers Academy named Trauma, and he's not a mutant, but he has the ability to transform into your fears, and he ends up using that ability to become like a trauma counselor and like therapist.
Oh, I can see that.
To help you work through your fears and like legit, like literally face your fears. And it's like that's an application of a seemingly useless power in a fight that is really interesting. And I think powers like that and like empaths kind of force a writer to think outside the box in terms of how to keep them on screen. And so part of me was disappointed that they killed him off. While it was funny, but like I wanted to see how the author was going to make them a useful character with that kind of ability and that kind of detachment from reality. But
maybe in future missions we'll get to see that.
I mean, taking us back to where we started, I think one of the most interesting sort of parts of the Jessica Jones season one, and I think if I remember correctly, I read Alias like 10, 12 years ago, but I believe this is also part of the Alias comic series, that Jessica at one point tries to get him to use his power for good, you know, in situations where a person is like holding someone hostage, like telling them to stop, telling them not to do things. And we find out, at least in the show, and I believe in the comic as well, that Jessica was never really trying to do this in a real way. She was just trying to get him to lower his guard so that she can kill him because she quite understandably thinks that's necessary. But I remember watching it and being left thinking, like, but what if actually that was intentional? Like, could you, because part of what she's trying to do is show him the positive reinforcement of, look at the happiness you caused by saving these people. Isn't that worthwhile? Yeah. And to kind of teach him that can be valuable. And, you know, it kind of leaves an interesting question with both someone like a thought controller like Purple Man or a emotion color like empath of, could positive reinforcement help them to learn a different way to use their powers?
Yeah, I think it comes down to that character's ability to feel that like accomplishment, because that was kind of what got in the way of Kilgrave's arc for that in the Netflix show. Was like, well, they're not doing what I want. Like, I'm not having a good time with this. This is ridiculous. I need to do this now. And Jessica's like, no, take your time, blah, blah, blah. And like, if you can work through that hurdle, then sure, maybe.
And again, part of this goes back to the very gendered nature of wish fulfillment, power fantasy, that, you know, this the things that he wants are this sort of, this type of immediate gratification that, you know, if not just Purple Girl's example, but I think in general is somewhat gendered.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think that's, and that kind of thing is something anyone has to learn in terms of, you know, okay, right now, buying this thing right in this moment will make me feel happy right in this moment.
Yeah.
But after two or three times getting to the end of the month and going, how in the world do I pay this credit card bill? I start to realize maybe that feeling of having enough to pay my credit card at the end of the month is worth putting off that feeling of instant gratification. But you have to learn that, you know, you have to be taught, like, either through being taught or through experience. And
yeah,
so it's an interesting question.
I'm just staring at all the Legos directly behind Will as you say this.
Close my camera. You guys don't need to look at this.
Listen. That's only the case because you don't see the five boxes of magic cards, you know, in any huge cardboard boxes in the closet behind me. So, Will.
Oh, you want to talk about? Crippling magic card addictions. Ooh, that, boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I would use the word crippling, but yes, very much so. The cabinet.
All right. Yeah, I poke fun at Will, but I'm the one to blame.
Okay. Yes, well, at some point, I need to get you. We're going to keep racking up topics I want to discuss with you all because I have in the past and will in the future discuss the ethics of Magic the Gathering storylines. And yeah, because I think Jace is a picture of white male privilege and I can't stand Jace for it. But we've also had a lot of fun. Actually, this might be a fun thing with you all to do with comic book characters is put them all into the color identity for Magic the Gathering. You know, in terms of like,
yes,
we did like Han Solo is this and all kind of stuff like that. The look on Will's face, I've just blown a gasket in his head. Anyway, I've now also alienated all of my non-Magic Gathering players. So, in terms of the color, Steve, you go first because Will is still processing that last idea. Is there any other kind of last comments you want to make about this topic or last questions to bring up?
No, this was a great conversation. I'm super stoked on this.
Yeah, that was fun. This is one of the handful of examples that Steve and I, when we are recording our pods, we're like, oh, this is great for the ethics boys. We need to bring this to them. Ethics boys being Matthew and permanent guest host Paul.
Paul Hoppy, yes.
But
not a boy in my case, but yes, I understand exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
Well, it's so great because I love just all the interplay we have between these podcasts. And for people who maybe haven't heard you before and now want to hear what you all do on your own podcast, give them the quick 411 of how to find that.
Yeah, so anywhere you listen to podcasts, whatever your preferred platform is, check out Hype is My Superpower. Steve and I are both known to get incredibly hype about things that we like to talk about, and we like to talk about the stuff that we read every week. So hop on over again and find us on Facebook and ask us questions so we can have some viewer questions. We've only done a couple, but it'd be great to have some more.
Will's also on Twitch, burgeoning Twitch streamer, twitch.tv/silverdreamer, silver spelled with a Y.
Because I'm an edgelord.
He builds Legos and Gunpla models and hangs out and is just a generally extremely affable person. So go to that. I make comic books. If you ever want to check that out, you can follow me on Twitter or whatever. It's just my name. Yeah,
definitely. We'll have all those links in the show notes, and please check those folks out. If you kind of thought it was interesting that we could have this whole conversation about Empath and Beast that you could follow without having read the comic books about them, because I haven't either, that really is to me, that's the best part about your podcast, is that I have not read 99% of the comic books you talk about, but you explain them in enough detail and then go into talking about them in a way that makes it incredibly accessible. Which doesn't mean don't read. Like, you know, I think it's a great thing to read them if you can, and I think you'll probably get even more out of it. But if you kind of just want the cliff notes of what's happening in comic books today, you all are a great podcast to listen to. So definitely check it out.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. And of course, give them feedback. Give us feedback. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, at The Ethical Panda. The Ethical Panda. You can also find our website at theethicalpanda@gmail.com. That's my email. website is theethicalpanda.com. Give us feedback. What do you think of these two characters? What do you think? Could a purple man or an empath be redeemed? Or could they have been raised differently or be taught differently now? Are we being too sympathetic to them? Should we just look at them as evil? Let us know what you think. I love the feedback. Please check out their podcast, this podcast, my other podcast, Star Wars Universe Podcast. We're back after a little of a hiatus. There's, of course, so many other great podcasts on the Stranded Panda Podcast Network. Great discussions of Marvel stuff, Star Wars, Star Trek, different things going on in media. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to launch Ethics After Dark, in which we're going to start discussing the TV show True Blood, which has an awful lot of ethical issues it brings up, along with an awful lot of softcore porn that's a lot of fun to watch. And so Ashley Coffin and I will be discussing that show on all the different levels. But the one thing I also really want to let you all know about is we're still in the midst of this review contest, where if you write a 5-star review for any of the Stranded Panda podcast shows, that's this podcast, Superhero Ethic, this podcast, Superhero Ethic, Star Wars Universe Podcast, Star Trek Podcast, PandaVision, etc. Every time you write a 5-star review for one of them, and make an actual review, don't just say, I love pandas, or I'm here for the prize, but every time you put a real review in, you will get entered into a raffle that we're going to do at the end of September, and the winner of the raffle can win either an Oculus 2 virtual reality or a Nintendo Switch, both of which are great things to have. And if you write a review for just this show, you get entered once. If you write a review for 5 shows, you get entered 5 times. So it's a great thing to do. We always love reviews. Reviews are super helpful. And the reason we're doing this is because reviews help people find these podcasts. So even though it's not part of the contest, please also write a review for Hype is My Superpower. Again, after listening to it, not just because I told you to go do it. I'm not Purple Man. But I'm asking you to do that.
I do look damn good, Will.
In a purple vest and tie, I will say. Jessica. But a whole other story there. Right? But so the point is, gosh, I love wearing purple, and I've never thought, am I trying to emulate Purple Man?
It's a great color, man.
It's a great color.
I'm now in all sorts of concerns here, but we're going to put that aside. The point is, go review Hype, go listen to Hype is My Superpower and review it. Review my stuff. Review the other stuff in the Stranded Panda Network. It helps people find us and helps you get entry into a contest. So on behalf of myself, Steve, and Will, thank you all so much for being listeners, and have a good day.
Take care.
Thanks for having us.